Good morning. I'd like to welcome everyone today to a special council meeting of the Mesa City Council for Thursday, May 20th, 2010. And the purpose of this meeting is to hear a report concerning bids received for the purchase of the city's general obligation bond series 2010 and to act upon those bids. So, Mr. Raines?
Good morning, Mayor, Council.
Excuse me, before you go, and I would like to excuse Councilmember Dave Richens, who is out of town and will not be joining us this morning. So, Mr. Raines.
Thank you, Mayor. Not only are we going to hear about general obligation bonds this morning, but we'll also hear about our market experience on utility system revenue bonds, as well as highway project advancement notes. With me this morning is Larry Given, our financial advisor. Also in the audience is Sarah Smith and Scott Ruby from our bond counsel from Gust Rosenfeld. We appreciate them being here and all the effort they've put in the past couple months on this project. If you remember, Mayor, last month we were here requesting council permission to go to market bonds for, as I said, the general obligation bonds, our utility revenue bonds, and some highway project advancement notes. We do this annually every year. Is kind of a normal course of action or course of business. Yesterday we were in the market. There's a summary on page 2 of your packet that's in front of you of where we were at. We sold $30,865,000 of general obligation bonds. There was one bidder on that bond, even though there was a lot of interest in those bonds going in and a lot of deposits placed with us. There was only one final bidder, and we ended up with a adjusted interest cost of 3.637%. We sold these as Build America bonds. There seems to be a lot of interest. Last year, if you remember, we sold our utility revenue bonds as Build America bonds. We were kind of the first ones in the state to do that. We followed it up this year with the having the same option. People could either do a tax-exempt or a taxable Build America bond, and in both instances, our general obligations and our utility revenues, the bidders went that direction.
So, Brian, just to remind everybody or to refresh everyone's memory, just very quickly explain the Build America program.
Good morning, Mr. Mayor, members of council. The Build America bond program arises from federal legislation adopted last year as part of the stimulus program, as part of the American Recovery Act program. And the Build America bonds basically work like this. The bonds must be qualified to be issued as tax-exempt bonds, but then are issued as taxable bonds, and the city receives a 35% subsidy for all interest payments. And that's the way they work.
And by doing that this year, Larry believes we saved about $1.2 million in structuring them that way on the general obligation side. So it was a pretty good move for us.
As an example, the on the general obligation bonds, the interest rate was about 5.59%, a taxable rate. With the subsidy, that equates to a 3.63% rate, which is an average life of 18 years is very good.
Yeah. So, and as opposed to, I don't know if you're going to get to this, last year we issued bonds into that also. I don't see.
Right. That was the 4.3.
Correct. Last year, our net interest cost comparable was about 4.3%. Those were tax-exempt bonds, so these were about 0.75 points lower, so a significant adjustment downward for us. You know, last year we were saying we got great rates, and we didn't think we'd ever see them lower, but it's proved to be positive for us.
Okay.
Just in summary, utility system revenue bonds, we had 5 bidders. They also bid these as Build America bonds. Our adjusted net interest cost is a little bit over 3.96%. The savings on this as compared to issuing them as taxable is about $5.3 million over the life of the bonds. So, again, a good move, we believe. Last year, these were issued for about 4.1%, so some savings there as well. And then finally, if you remember last fall, we issued our first group of highway project advancement notes for $20 million. This was to acquire right-of-way for State Route 802 in the Southeast Valley. We issued those. The state ADOT has started to acquire that right-of-way and move forward. This is the second group of those to let them finish that right-of-way acquisition. And we sold those bonds at 2.99%. To the same group that bought our first group last fall, but they were purchased at 3.3%. So, again, a savings there. So with that, Mayor, we're more than happy to answer any questions that you have.
Any questions?
I have provided on page two, though, the motions in kind of a written form. I know they're fairly long. So right there under 2A, B, and C is the motions of somebody, whatever the council's pleasure is.
Mayor, just quickly.
Ready?
We kind of just do these as a routine nowadays, but this is really, it's still very significant for the city, both today and in the long term, getting these low interest bonds at these amounts over the term of the bonds will be, the city of Mesa will realize the benefit for years to come. So I think it's both a combination of good timing into the market and certainly Larry's help in helping structure the bonds for the Build America bonds. That was not necessarily easy to do. We had to make sure it met the criteria that was set out. But I think it also is a notice that the bond market sees Mesa as a good buy and good credit in the long term. So I think at the end of the day, this is very good news. Last year we celebrated it. We thought it was great. And here we are saying it's gotten even better. So congratulations to the city of Mesa for being very competitive in the market. So thank you.
Okay. Councilman Kavanaugh.
Mayor, just to follow up on Mr. Brady's comments, I've been getting advice from Mr. Raines and Mr. Gibbons now for a lot of years on the bond programs, and consistently they and their staff just do a remarkable job for the city and have allowed us to make many smart financial decisions, and so I'd like to compliment them. I also like to point out, as Mr. Brady said, the significant advantage to the city with the Buy America bonds. All too often the headlines are full of criticism about elements of the stimulus package, but this is certainly one of those elements that truly has helped America's cities, and us in particular. And I think it was a well-crafted program that has provided incentives for the market and for cities to use it, and I think all of our residents are going to benefit from it for many, many years. Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you, Councilmember. Any other questions or comments? Do we have a motion? Go ahead, turn it on. Councilmember Fenter. Go ahead and hit your. No, Blue.
Thank you.
There we go.
Motion is, it's early, to accept the recommendations and proceed with these bond sales as presented to us today.
Okay. We will take items. Ms. Spinner, can we combine these under one motion, or do we have to act on these separately?
Let me ask our bond council. One motion? Okay. One motion is fine, Mayor.
Okay. So, Councilmember Fender, would that include items as defined in items, agenda items 2A, 2B, and 2C, which would be the general obligation, the utility systems, and the HPAN highway
project? Yes, sir.
Advancement notes?
Yes, Mayor.
We have a motion from Councilman Fenter, a second from Councilmember Summers. Is there any further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motions carry. The motion carries, and 2A, 2B, 2C are approved. Thank you. Ms. Crocker, do we have any requests to speak from the audience?
No requests, Mayor.
Okay, we have a motion to adjourn from Councilmember Summers, a second from Councilmember Kavanaugh. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
We are adjourned, our special council meeting. Thank you so very much. And that is great news. We'll now move into the study session. And the first item on our study session agenda is to hear a presentation and discuss the 2010 Arizona legislative session. Mr. Butler.
Good morning, Mayor, Council. It's so nice to be able to deliver a legislative wrap-up in May, for the record. So just wanted to thank you for that opportunity today. So, Mayor, Council, we obviously had an interesting session. A lot of it focused solely on the budget, which is one of the reasons why we had such a condensed session this year. The focus that the legislature put behind trying to get a budget out as soon as possible allowed them to do that in early March, which then started the countdown clock for folks who wanted to see adjournment as quickly as possible after that. And the legislature did adjourn on April 29th. That is their earliest date of adjournment in about 14 years. And but still in that time, there were over 1,200 pieces of legislation introduced. 338 of those eventually became law, and the governor vetoed 14 bills. There were about 400 bills that Mesa tracked and monitored through that process. And so when we talk about the impact that the legislature has on cities and towns, a third of all of their bills dealt somewhat with some of the activities that we're engaged in as a city. So they certainly do have a tremendous impact on the way we do business. Some of the major themes, obviously, we saw on Tuesday, the passage of Proposition 100 that will generate about $1 billion a year for 3 years for the state. That will probably keep the legislature out of special session for budget purposes, at least until January, because it will help fill those budget questions for the next few months. There's still talk about economic development, special sessions, and other things like that, but it doesn't look like they'll be going in for budget purposes, which should bode well for shared revenue for the short term. State General Fund is really back at numbers that they haven't seen since 2004, 2005, so they had to cut a tremendous amount from the state budget this year in order to get to that balanced budget, including counting on Proposition 100 revenue for that. One of the things I think that sometimes we've lost in this discussion, too, about Proposition 100 is actually what cities and towns have given up through that process. Normally, when the state increases its sales tax, that's shared amongst cities and towns. We worked with the state early on in the process to allow them to capture 100% of that sales tax increase. To put that in perspective, out of the $1 billion a year that the state's going to generate for these 3 years, over $200 million would normally be shared with cities and towns based on the revenue-sharing formula that currently exists. So this is not a minor concession that cities and towns have made with the state in order to help the state balance its budget. What I wanted to do quickly before we get into any bills or any questions that you all may have, and please stop me along the way, I wanted to go back to the presentation I gave to you all in early January talking about our legislative priorities, update you on how those turned out, and then go into some other bills that came up throughout the course of the session. The first, as we just mentioned, were shared revenue. While there was no direct assault on urban revenue sharing and our main sources of revenue, we still see some of the other funds, obviously most importantly the local transportation assistance funds, the money that we use to support our transit operations were swept, over $2 million of impact there. We're also seeing other funds that used to be reliable sources of funding, from airport funds to other sources like that have just dried up over the last few years, and we're not able to use those funds to help leverage federal dollars, which increases more burden on cities and towns to come up with those funds locally. Public safety, as always, there is a vigorous debate and discussion dealing with the photo enforcement programs. Happy to report, though, most of those centered on the photo radar on the freeway, and very few bills dealt with arterial photo enforcement. And of those, there were just minor changes, with some requiring a certain distance between speed changes, I believe 600 feet now, between a change in the speed limit to where a photo enforcement device can be located. There were also some changes dealing with the duration of yellow lights, which did not impact Mesa, but impacted some cities who had a shorter duration of a yellow light. So there were just minor changes to photo enforcement. Obviously, we knew coming into the session that immigration was going to be an important issue, a hot-button issue at the legislature. One of the things that we did at cities and towns to try to make some of the bills last year and this year more workable was to try to work with the legislature, try to work with leadership to clarify some of the ambiguity that existed in the language that really caused difficulty for our police departments in knowing how and in what manner to enforce the law. We did work with the Chiefs Association and leadership to do what was called a, in legislative terms, a trailer bill, but a follow-up bill to Senate Bill 1070 after it passed, which was House Bill 2162, that clarified both some of the provisions of 1070 that already looked problematic from an enforcement standpoint, and then also addressed some of the questions that were left over from last session on some of the immigration bills that passed then. The mayor had some conversations with the speaker and Senator Pierce early on back in January or February, along with the president of the league, Boyd Dunn, to talk about the necessity of making sure that we had language that would allow our departments to enforce the law in the manner in which it was intended to be enforced, but providing clear direction for our officers on the street. So I don't know if we got all the way there, but we worked with Senator Pierce to make some concessions. The mayor may want to comment on that, but we do appreciate some willingness to work with us on some of those.
No, I just think that we need, regardless how you feel about this, I mean, and this, so we understand, we're not making a political statement on immigration per se, but I think we need to understand that this is a bill that the legislature passed that has a potentially huge impact on cities, and which is why I would say I can't count the number of cities on one hand who support 1070, because it is an unfunded mandate. All of the enforcement, or not all, but probably 98% of the enforcement requirements of 1070 fall on cities and towns. There is a mechanism in 1070 that allows and provides for funding of those efforts, but the legislature chose not to fund any of those. We don't know yet what that impact will be, but this is not a cost-free endeavor. And depending upon how it plays out, it could create significant financial costs to the cities. Now, regardless of how you feel about immigration enforcement, it's not a free ride. And I just hope that everybody understands that the legislature passed this with full knowledge that the cost burdens were specifically laid upon cities and towns and their citizens. And as long as everyone understands that and are willing to, when the bill comes due, know that we're going to have to cut the check to pay that, then I just want to make sure that everyone understands that. And I haven't even gotten into the debate over the effect upon our police departments and the mandates on that. That's a whole different issue. But just so people understand why mayors and city councils might have issues with 1070, which has virtually nothing to do with the immigration issue, although it's almost impossible to have a discussion without being either complete and total racist or complete and total open border. You know, I mean, that's where the discussion seems to go real quickly. This has nothing to do with that. This has to do with the impact on our citizens at the city and town level. And, you know, a lot of the debate in this says that, well, if we solve this problem or make a dent in it, then the cost savings will be in excess of the additional costs. We need to understand that, once again, going back to the debate, most of those cost savings are not cost savings to the cities. They are cost savings to the state and to the health system. The costs that are incurred are completely on the cities, or potentially completely on the cities. So I just want to make sure that when we say we've mitigated it, I appreciate, because I know that the first version was devastating. What ended up is, you know, it's livable. We'll figure out a way to, if 1070 does become the final law, we'll figure out a way to work within it, because it'll be state law, and we will work within it. But I think our citizens need to understand the consequences to cities and towns and to their city of this legislation. So that's my rant for the day.
Thank you, Mayor.
Council Member Summers.
Scott, on House Bill 2504, the GPLET law, how do you, in your assessment, how is that going to impact potentially
Gaylord deal, because GPLET was part of that Gaylord deal.
Let me skip forward just a page on this, Councilmember, Mayor, Councilmember. I was about to bring that up under our economic development session, so I'll jump right to that. One of the multi-year items we've looked at has been reform of the government property lease excise tax program, which is basically a program put in place back in the 80s and refined in the 90s that allowed for government-owned property to be put into use by private developers.
Let's go beyond and explain a little bit why it was put into place and what the feeling was and why that
it was good. Mayor, Council, it was meant as an opportunity. Right now, government-owned property is exempt from paying property tax in the state of Arizona. There were instances where certain entities were and cities had gotten into the process of actually owning the facilities. Phoenix, and the most prominent example were the larger multi-story buildings in downtown Phoenix, Chase Tower, Renaissance Towers, those that were owned actually by the city of Phoenix but were controlled and leased by private developers. So it was a means to bring those buildings onto the tax roll and but still allow some benefit for the developer to put so much infrastructure into a 40-story tower.
Well, and the reason for doing this is that the reality is that Arizona's business property tax burden is abnormal, is out of whack with normal or other states, however you want to say that, and therefore there was an obstacle to people investing, mm-hmm. because they would pay an extraordinarily high, relatively high business property tax in Arizona as opposed to other places, and so it was a disincentive to invest in Arizona when you had this huge property tax burden. So what people did is they went around it and devised, as lawyers often do, devised a very clever scheme to have the government own the building, which meant there were no property taxes. So the pendulum swung very hard to the other side. You went from an abnormally high tax on one side to no tax on the other. GPLET was mm-hmm. Was the compromise in the middle.
That's correct.
Okay.
And Mayor, at the time in the 90s when the last changes were made to the GPLET statute, a rate structure was put in place that unfortunately had no inflators, had no changes in there. And obviously as the years have passed and commercial market has changed and rates have gone up, those rates became less and less consistent with what was actually happening on the active market. So there has been an attempt in the past few years to reform the GPLET law by updating those rates. Where it really came to impact the city of Mesa is obviously part of our deal with DMB and Gaylord Entertainment deals with a GPLET property on the Hotel and Convention Center. Last year, which gained some attention in the press, GPLET bill failed in the final hours of the session, and the city of Mesa was blamed for the failure of that bill, of which we took great pride, because the deal did not adequately grandfather in existing deals and would have, by essence, killed the Gaylord development that we had in place. And we worked very closely with Senator Thayer Verschuer and others to make sure that that bill did not have the adequate votes to get out, because it did not have adequate protection for projects such as ours. And also the irony of it is, under the rate structure that was in the bill last year, the only place you would have been able to do GPLET in the state of Arizona would really have been downtown Phoenix, and
which is really about the only place you do it now. Almost every building in downtown and uptown Phoenix is built with GPLET. Tempe, almost every one of those buildings, Hayden's Ferry, GPLET, Tempe Marketplace, because it was a downtown centric, so Tempe actually redefined their definition of downtown to go along the river, go clear out to the city line to Price, take in the Tempe Marketplace, everything along Rio Salado. All those were built with GPLET. And yet Gaylord would have been excluded.
The realities are, Mayor, that, and I know it's something Mr. Jebjeniak could speak to better than I could, but we have very few economic development tools in the state of Arizona versus some of our competing states. And unfortunately, as you look at GPLED, it has become an area, especially for larger pieces of infrastructure, large buildings, that has become an economic development tool that we rely on. And
well, unfortunately, it's an economic development tool which is not meant to give an advantage, but as I said, because of our really discriminatory taxing policy on the state level, GPLET merely hopefully levels the field and brings us down to the taxing levels of other states. So it's hardly even an economic development incentive as much as it is removing a huge barrier that we have to capital formation.
That's a really good point, Mayor. And unfortunately, others haven't seen it that way. They see it as something that they're trying to bring it equal to what our current corporate commercial tax rate structure is, which, again, if you're competing for deals, much like we were with Gaylord, with California, or with New Mexico or Nevada, really puts us at a disadvantage when corporations are looking at the offers on the table and see what their corporate property tax rate would be, or their commercial property tax rate would be in Arizona. So what we've hoped, even though, as the mayor indicated, Tempe is the most proficient user of this tool, and Phoenix a very close second. Most other cities have just done a handful, including Mesa. I believe, Brian, this is only our second GPLET deal. The first one is here in downtown, the U.S. Bank building renovations was the first GPLET deal that the city had entered into. We wanted to make sure that this was a viable alternative for the city of Mesa so that it wouldn't further put cities like ours at a disadvantage to just the central city being able to do these deals. So this year, we were happy to support the compromise that came through for three reasons. One, it adequately grandfathered in existing deals, and we worked with many folks to make sure that the language adequately grandfathered in the Gaylord development agreement that we're currently operating under. Secondly, a major provision we thought, the city of Mesa is traditionally a low-tax community compared to some of our neighbors, and a concession was made that there would be a differential in the rate structure between lower-tax communities such as ours and higher-tax communities such as many of the cities in the West Valley. And so it allowed the East Valley some parity in the rate structure, which we thought was a good concession that some of the proponents of the reform had. It took them 4 years, but they finally got there. So we were glad to see that. And third, it really provided a basic rate structure that made sense, that wasn't oppressive to business, and then put in an inflator that's tied to the construction. I can't remember which index off the top of my head, but hopefully it'll be many years before we have to revisit this issue again. So we felt that it was a reasonable compromise that came out of 3 to 4 years of discussion and debate at the legislature. So Mayor Councilmember Summers, the direct response is we feel very secure, and as did the attorneys for DMB and Gaylord, that the grandfathering language that was in the GPLET, that is in the GPLET bill, adequately protects the project. Skipping back up, just one on the, I thought that maybe we needed to talk about something somewhat more positive before we went from immigration to spring training in the legislative discussion, but you may have heard about this little bill we ran dealing with spring training facilities. Unfortunately, as you all know, the bill did not make it, was not allowed to even be heard in the Senate because of many reasons, but President Bob Burns, who is not a fan of sports facilities in general, refused to let the bill be heard without certain conditions and other things. But the good news is we continue to work with our friends at the legislature. We continue to look for opportunities to address tourism and spring training in the state, because especially now more than ever, we need to invest in those things that really help drive our economy, and tourism is one of those. So we continue to have those discussions with the legislature.
Yeah, it's real interesting getting back to tying immigration back into this. Yeah. I was interested to see the boycotts and how everyone was in a fritter because in a fritter? Does that even make sense? A Twitter. Yeah, I do. I tweet. I can imagine being in a fritter. That's, you know, you baked it around over this. Made that up. We've got, they talked about, you know, the Phoenix area losing $90 million over 5 years. And everyone's all up in arms because how devastating that will be. When we talk about if the Chicago Cubs move out, it's $130 to $140 million a year. And yet we can get no action at the legislature. So that's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that things happen, that people lost sight of the tourism and overall Cactus League emphasis on the efforts. And, you know, we're still working to see if we can come full circle and get people back online, and maybe then we will have a fritter to celebrate.
And Mayor, I think it's important for folks to understand, I know the council does, that there are a lot of people at the legislature who understand, maybe to varying degrees, but understand the importance of the Chicago Cubs and spring training to the Valley's economy and to Arizona's economy. Sometimes you get loved to death, and this is one of those, because they knew, many special interests knew the popularity of the Chicago Cubs. They knew what they mean to Arizona, and whether it be hockey or other various special interests tried to find a way to be included in our bill, which at the legislature sometimes is a dangerous remedy for, or dangerous recipe for trying to get a bill passed. So we're hopeful that
recipe
we can...
Recipe for fritters.
Yeah, we're recipe for fritters to get the bill passed. So we, unfortunately, a lot of people saw an opportunity to get their own agendas passed through our legislation, but we're still hopeful that the legislature...
And at the end of the day, nobody got it.
At the end of the day, nothing passed.
Nothing
to benefit any of those special interests.
So. Nobody won out of this thing.
Exactly.
Well, and we all lost, potentially lost.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly in the legislative session, we would have made the road a lot easier, but it didn't kill it.
Mm-hmm.
We're still working it.
Well, to stay on that rosy picture as well in the economic development, we were disappointed that the legislature didn't extend yet the motion picture tax credit legislation that's has been in effect for the last several years. It's due to sunset in December of 2010. The bill did pass the Senate. It made it all the way to the final votes in the House, where it was not brought up for a final vote before the session adjourned. Unfortunately, there were various interests between different developers who had projects that they're looking to do, some in the West Valley, and then many are familiar with the Gateway Studios project in the East Valley. At Gateway, unfortunately, because of some of the confusion over which developer wanted what, the bill never was heard for a final vote. There's still hope that because this bill does not this legislation does not sunset until December of 2010, that the legislature may be able to remedy this situation either through a special session this year or immediately in January when they reconvene in 2011. But it does leave projects, including a project in Avondale, and I would say our Gateway Studios project, probably somewhat in limbo, not knowing whether this tax credit program will still exist. Some good news from the council perspective. I believe we had a spirited discussion back in January about the payday loan legislation. At the time, the industry was looking for other opportunities to try to make some concessions and bring forward a bill that could garner enough votes for passage. There were about four, five, six different attempts at the legislature to bring this up in various forms. It did not pass. Senator Chuck Gray and others were actually very instrumental, and Senator Debbie McCune Davis from Phoenix. And every time an extension was brought forward, they would help kill it. And so the bill did not pass. And the authorizing legislation for the payday loan industry to charge the rate structure that's currently in place expires on June 30th of this year, in just a little over a month. So we'll certainly see some changes in the industry. Now, moving, that concludes really what we started as in January as our priorities. Now, through the course of the legislative session, we had several bills that came to impact us and that we really closely monitored. One is certainly a discussion we've had here in this setting has been the County Library District. We were fortunate that Senator Linda Gray from Phoenix was willing to work with the cities and towns to try to bring forward a bill to bring some parity, to try to bring some sanity to the process, to where Mesa taxpayers continue to subsidize libraries in other communities. And unfortunately, the bill didn't make it through for various reasons, but we've already heard that Sandra Gray has said that she's bringing it back next year. She really believes in this. As a taxpayer in Phoenix, she doesn't understand why her tax dollars are being used by other communities to support more robust libraries than Phoenix is able to support, and I know that's only an amen from us, because as we see our library hours continue to be cut or force pressures because of budget constraints, and we don't see the same level of activity or lack of activity at the county facilities, it really shows the inequities that exist under the County Library District.
Councilman Kavanaugh.
Just a question, Mr. Butler. In terms of the way the situation is operating now, as I understand it, basically Mesa taxpayers are paying, 100% of the cost of the library in Sun City?
There are several, Mayor, Councilmember Kavanaugh, there are several county libraries, Sun City, Queen Creek, Avondale, I believe, and others who certainly have been very good beneficiaries of county library money and staffing.
So I kind of remember that Mesa taxpayers are paying, $2.9 million, and then $2.7 million, and then the operational costs for the Sun City Library are $2.9 million. So we've been very generous in supporting the library in Sun City, I guess.
Mm-hmm. We had an issue where Senator Burns, who was termed out, by the way, Senator Burns represents Sun City and refused to let the bill move forward for hearing. And
I'm
Senator,
shocked.
Senator Jack Harper from the West Valley, who also represents portions of Sun City, also refused the bill to be heard in his committee. So we looked for other avenues to try to divert around that, but sometimes when the Senate President and others are really adamant that a bill won't be heard, they don't happen. And fortunately, next year, we believe some of those roadblocks may not be as stringent as they were this year. So. Fireworks.
I'm impressed by your diplomacy. Because I'm doing everything I can to keep the thoughts here from coming out here.
I've had some time to get some therapy.
Yeah, just there. So.
Fireworks. Many on the council are aware that legislation was passed this year after several years of being vetoed by the prior administration to allow limited use of fireworks within the state. One of the, I believe, and Councilmember Summers could probably tell me, sparklers has been the best example of what's allowable. Apparently, my understanding is it's only those things that are handheld, nothing that shoots off, no bottle rockets, no Roman candles, none of those things we did as a kid, or at least I did as a kid, not in Arizona, are allowed, but sparklers are allowable. One of the provisions that did allow the bill to be signed and the governor highlighted as one of the reasons why she was allowing this bill to become law dealt with the fact that it did provide a provision for municipalities to regulate or even exempt or ban fireworks within their boundaries. So it left it up to incorporated municipalities to also decide, and counties, how they would go about regulating fireworks within their jurisdiction. So I know I've already heard from several members of the council who have some questions about what we may do here. I know Chief Beck and others in fire are already talking to our neighboring communities. We've seen cities like the city of Tempe, who's already looked at possibly doing a ban, but I'm not sure if that's a definite or if they're just looking at exploring opportunities. So I'm
what if we allowed them only along the Tempe border?
When the wind is moving
out of the east.
The city manager has Chris has shown us some examples of what's happened in other states where they've also regulated it, and I know Councilmember Summers has looked at some other states as well for examples. So I believe this is a discussion that's not only going to happen with our neighbors with Gilbert and Chandler, Tempe, and others here in the valley, but it's really going to be a statewide discussion. Obviously, some communities in the White Mountains, you can assume, will automatically ban the use in Pine Top and others where the fire risk is even more prevalent. But certainly there are risks that come even if it's not forest fire necessarily related. And so we're going to be looking at this from a public safety standpoint. I know a lot of discussions need to happen before we can come back to council, I believe, with some kind of recommendations from the fire department and others on how to go about this.
Councilmember Higgins.
And I just wonder, are we including the county? You know how we have totally surrounded County Allens, and I know it's illegal now, but it's a big problem out in Northeast Mesa around that time.
Does the bill allow counties to opt out?
Yes. Okay. Yeah, the counties, mayor, the counties can choose, just as we will have the opportunity to choose. And unfortunately, Councilmember Higgins, we'll only be able to still control our incorporate or set policy within our incorporated boundaries. We'll have to look to our friends at the county if we need some assistance in certain areas. So
we can't deputize Mesa PD for a couple days around 4th of July?
Sure.
No. Mayor, the good news is the effective date isn't until December 1st of this year, which will hopefully allow time for a lot of discussion to happen. The League of Arizona Cities and Towns is looking into potential model ordinances that communities could utilize, and certainly we've heard everything from the balance of an outright ban in certain cities to controlled allowance in others, in other communities. So we'll be looking at all the options on the table. Working.
I think I heard one where they're only going to allow fireworks around county libraries. That'd be good.
We'll never get our money back.
Another bill,
we'll
mayor.
Feel better about it.
We get to shoot them off of the roof.
Mayor, one bill that did garner a lot of attention in the East Valley, particularly in Scottsdale, was House Bill 2003, which allowed for the development of revitalization districts. Scottsdale ran this bill because they're looking to do some redevelopment along the McDowell Road corridor, where they've had numerous car dealerships relocate out of that corridor to other locations along the freeways, and now they're left with a long stretch of property, not unlike some things we see in Mason segments of our community, like on Broadway, where also we had many car dealers that left with large vacant lots that could be a great opportunity for redevelopment, but sometimes without the tools that we need in order to do that. House Bill 2003 was passed and signed by the governor to allow redevelopment areas that would be voted on by the property owners, that would allow the property owners to come together and make a decision about creating districts that could be used to revitalize and everything from landscaping to other things to try to make the area more suitable for redevelopment. So I know our folks in economic development are going to be looking closely at this to see if there are opportunities and ways that we could use this. For many years now, I know Councilmember Kavanaugh has been talking about opportunities around Fiesta Mall. This could potentially be part of one of the tools in the toolbox, a new tool that we could use on some of the redevelopment around the Fiesta area. So we're really happy that the legislature actually gave us a new tool this year that we might be able to utilize in conjunction with the actual property owners. So.
Let's see.
Somewhat in the same vein, a bill was being run by the Center for Arizona Policy to restrict the ability of cities and towns in their zoning as it relates to churches. There was an issue that came up in the city of Yuma where the city tried to block a church from locating in downtown Yuma. Yuma was concerned about what it would mean for its other efforts for redevelopment because of the 300-foot requirement that exists under state law that says you cannot have a facility, a restaurant or bar within 300 feet of a school or a place of worship. So Yuma was very concerned about how that could impact its downtown area. We actually, several cities, including Mesa, worked with the folks at the Center for Arizona Policy to come up with a compromise to this that we think may be a very workable solution for some of our redevelopment in downtown. The bill did pass. The bill was going to pass, so we were trying to help mitigate maybe some of the impacts of that by calling out for the formation of what was defined in the bill as entertainment districts. So cities between 200 and 500,000 in population are allowed to create two entertainment districts within their boundaries. And within those entertainment districts, it basically waives the 300-foot requirement between churches and restaurants and other locations. So if
Now hold on, you misstated there.
Yeah.
Because it does not apply to restaurants.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
The current law, there's no 300-foot boundary, there's no 300-foot exclusion for restaurants. And that's been a misnomer in downtown Mesa forever and ever. Mm-hmm. That's not what state liquor law says. Mm-hmm. It's the class 6 bars and that would be a sports bar. A restaurant can have meets the food, alcohol mix can operate next door to a church. And that's not an exclusion. That's in existing state liquor law. And the reason I say that is I even had members of our staff who have misunderstood that about downtown Mesa forever and ever because a couple of food establishments were claiming that downtown, that absolutely is not true. Now, a sports bar or a regular bar that serves mixed drinks and does not meet the restaurant does have to comply with the 300 feet. That's what it applies to.
Yeah, thank you, Mayor. I definitely understand
that.
So thank you.
Just want to make sure we understand that because that's been something that's floating around. I've had people in the restaurant industry tell me they're not looking at downtown Mesa because, I can't build down there. This is when we had the church down on
the Harvest
down on Main and McDonald. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm not even looking there because you can't do something in downtown Mesa because there's churches all over the place. Mm-hmm. That's an absolute, that's a fallacy. That's incorrect. Not that I have any strong feelings about it one way or another, but just want to make sure people understand that.
You can also see why I haven't been enlisted by the Downtown Association to help.
Yeah,
recruit. So thank you, Mayor, for that clarification. But we do believe that will provide tools. And we were really fortunate that Central Arizona or Center for Arizona Policy wanted to work with cities and towns to make this change. They understood that they needed to be good partners with cities and towns in downtown areas, and we really thought that was a major concession that Center for Arizona Policy made in order to help get this legislation through. Transit planning was another issue that was tackled during the session. There has been some ambiguity in state law that differs between what federal law says about who's responsible for planning and programming of transit operations in Maricopa County versus what state law said back many years ago when RPTA was first created legislatively. Legislation was passed this year that basically clarifies that federal law has supremacy and that in doing that, sometimes that's a concession, Mayor Councilmember Kavanaugh, for the state legislature. And in doing so, reaffirm that the Council of Government, the Transportation Management Association, which is MAG, Maricopa Association of Governments, is responsible for planning and programming transit in the valley. So it did clear up some confusion that existed there. There were several eminent domain bills that went through, sponsored by Senator Chuck Gray. one of the four ended up being enacted. Obviously, we monitored those closely in order to make sure it wouldn't provide an undue burden on some of our abilities for needed infrastructure like roadways and water and other necessary infrastructure. We feel like the bill that did pass did provide adequate protection for our concerns while still addressing the concerns, obviously, that Senator Gray had about the eminent domain process. Transparency was also a big buzzword at the legislature this year as opportunities to provide for additional notice and additional public
and thank disclosure. Heavens it was, because we all need to follow the same levels of transparency that the legislature does.
Yes.
You tried so hard to follow.
Yeah.
Just right now.
One bill that passed, House Bill 2282, is probably something of note to the council. That has a January 1st, 2013 effective date. Basically says that all expenditures made by the city, line item expenditures, have to be in a searchable database available online for any person to access. The state actually has to do this by January 1st, 2011. Where many are not very confident that the state's going to meet that that timeline that they set for themselves. They did give cities and counties an additional 2 years for enactment, so obviously we'll be looking at ways that we can, vendors and others who do this, that we're allowed, that we'll be able to get a database up that allows for that type of financial transparency, as it was described. Also, House Bill 22.
Scott, yes. Councilmember Summers.
I don't know who to ask this to. Mr. Brady, do you know how much this is going to cost us, just out of curiosity, to put up a searchable database, line item by line item, for every department in the city, for every invoice that we have? What's the cost of that? How much funding did the state provide in a pool so that we could pay for that?
Well, currently we couldn't.
They provided three times the amount of funding they did for 1070.
Awesome.
But under our current system, that would just not be possible. It just doesn't exist currently.
It would take thousands of staff hours to do that under our current system.
But to meet this law, how much is that? What do we have to put in place, and how much is that?
Talk about where we're headed.
Yeah, with the
fortunately, we're working towards City Edge, which is the replacement of our financial budgeting, HR, payroll, and time accounting systems. And that system will give us the ability to do that rather easily. Now that we have the legislation that's been passed, we've actually reached out to the Valley CIO community to look at maybe a joint partnership, because we all have the same mandate to do the same thing. And I think we're looking at some opportunities how we can leverage the state, actually. We have partners in Yuma and Tucson and Flagstaff that participate in joint strategic planning at that level. So hopefully we will leverage our City Edge, but we hopefully will leverage the community in general to build a system that we can all share and use.
So at the end of the day, with the, I guess it's good timing for us, that we'll be transitioning to a new financial system. So knowing these requirements ahead of time, we can incorporate that into that programming to make sure
we are moving that way with City Edge anyway.
Yeah, we'll be able to have information available.
Right. The system has the capabilities, even without this law. We just have to tailor them to make sure that the system can now conform.
The difference is, if we had to do it under the existing system,
yeah, we couldn't do it,
which is very manually driven. It would be that would be a very expensive proposition for us.
So at least we're fortunate, because we were planning on this with City Edge.
We anticipated
in updating our infrastructure. Yeah, we anticipated. But
our city management in their foresight planned for this long ago.
Thank goodness. But
they
other cities.
Saw one of our licensed fortune tellers who was able to tell them in advance, this is going to happen.
Why are you doing this to me? I should have seen that coming. Yes.
This is actually one of the bills we were following, and we did voice our opposition to it because of that unfunded mandate cost implications.
We were doing it anyway.
Right.
But had we not been doing it, the cost would have been in the millions of dollars for us to comply.
Oh, and staff time. And
okay. And Mayor, Councilmember Summers, as Alex said, we are very fortunate. A lot of other cities aren't in that same situation. Certainly the state is not even in that situation to where they have the financial and technological capabilities to do what is now being mandated upon them by themselves. So we'll see how this plays out. But unfortunately,
if they just buy Quicken, that really does a good job. You can go online, get the trial disc. The whole state could do that.
I hate to say this, but there is actually a legislator who said that. So,
but he said it. He or she said it seriously.
Correct. That's why it's very unfortunate.
Once again, the
none of our major legislators. Through. Let me just clarify that. So,
you get the $24,000 a year.
And Mayor, the last bill, just wanted to highlight before. There's any questions or any other bills that folks wanted to bring up. There were some changes this year to the Arizona State Retirement System for non-public safety, non-elected officials who are in the retirement system. It's only going to affect new hires after January 1, 2011, but it extends the retirement time frame by a few years from 80 points to 85 points. Of course, there's a formula, so it's not necessarily 5 years additional, but it will extend new hires after January 1, 2011, some of their retirement benefits and their retirement time frame. So they're looking at ways to further try to stabilize the state retirement system, and that's some of the reform that was passed this year in that regard. And Mayor, before opening up to any questions, just wanted to really thank publicly city staff. When you talk about 400 bills, but we do look at all 1,200 initially, it really is an effort. And we have liaisons in all the departments who get assigned bills, and attorneys who have to review it, and others. And it really is an undertaking to try to keep up with all the legislation. City staff does a great job, and like to thank them for their effort, and also really thank Miranda Culver, who was kind of thrown in to this when we had some staff changes right before the session, and really appreciate Miranda's work in helping keep the trains running on time and making sure all the bills get out and getting proper comment back from our departments, and it couldn't happen without a real team effort here at the city.
Okay, Councilman Kavanaugh.
Thank you. I want to compliment Mr. Butler and everybody from the city who worked so hard this session. Some of you may know in another lifetime I worked at Legislative Council for 6 years drafting many of these bills that look like this and do many strange things. And it is not an easy task to monitor the 1,200 bills that are introduced, because you also have to remember you're monitoring thousands of amendments to the 1,200 bills. Plus, you're also working on bills that, thank goodness, for a lot of reasons, never got introduced. And it's not an easy task to do. And if you remember, we lost a full-time position to another community earlier this year for this. And so I think that Mr. Butler and Miranda and everyone from all the departments have really pulled together in a great team effort for really doing some, I think, stellar work for us. And so I'd like to add my commendations to what they've done.
And I know there are some, I have people ask me, why do we even have representatives down at the legislature when we elect city employees down there? And I, you know, to understand that as much as we love most of the time our state legislators that represent us, they get down into 1700 West Washington and it's a different world. And but for the efforts of staff and other city staff, you know, there could be some extremely damaging or significant, usually when it's significant, is damaging legislation, because the state thinks differently than cities do, and they don't always either understand or even take into consideration the effect on us. You know, 1070 is a great example about enacting laws without regard to the effect on cities. And there are some that's inadvertent; they just don't understand how it would negatively affect the citizens of our community. So I appreciate your efforts. It's well needed. And it's not about getting more most of the time. It's about understanding and explaining and protecting our citizens from both devious and unintended efforts. So,
Mayor,
thank you.
And GPLAT is probably a perfect example of that.
Great example.
We had a vote of the people, overwhelming support for the development project that was occurring out at Gateway, and unfortunately legislation last year would have killed it. And
legislation would have killed it, but protected some other cities' efforts to do that. Like you said, it was a special interest, and had we not been there to run interference, that would have gone through. It would have killed our citizens' efforts and their voice to protect a special interest outside of our city. And that happens all the time.
And Mayor, hopefully, too, we'll have an opportunity. We have some really great legislators who represent Mesa, though, and a lot of the good work that gets done, both helping us get things through, but also keeping some bad things away, are done by some great folks that represent Mesa. And so hopefully the league always has at their annual conference where it recognizes legislative champions and friends of cities and towns, and hopefully following that we'll have an opportunity maybe to recognize some of our folks locally too, because you know, without them understanding and keeping some lines of communication open, it wouldn't be possible to do what we do. So we do have to recognize a lot of our state legislators for the work that they do. So,
good. Thank you, Scott. Any other questions? Good. Hearings and reports of meetings and conferences attended. Councilman Kavanaugh.
Mayor, yesterday I had the opportunity to go back to the Dobson Ranch Branch Library to read with the preschool kids, and the reading part was good, but I'm sure the kids and their parents will be forever traumatized since the kids asked me to dance with them to a freeze dance, which I had never seen before.
Dance?
Freeze.
Dance?
A freeze dance, yes. And
do we have YouTube evidence of this?
There will be.
There are, I'm pretty sure, and my political career is probably destroyed with that. But the point of what I want to make is that our staff has, and volunteers at the library have great programs for kids, and they're unveiling and encouraging our residents to participate in the summer programs and activities really for all ages at all the branches of our library. And they do a wonderful job, and I think there's some wonderful opportunities for our residents to take advantage of it, and I would hope they do. Thanks.
Thank you. Anything else? Councilmember Higgins.
Mayor, I would like to invite everyone out to Friday at 6:30, the Desert Challenge opening ceremonies. You know what the Desert Challenge? It's a, somebody help me here. I can't remember.
I may
remember.
Not, but.
Okay. I can't remember what the description is. It's a track and field event. We'll be at Red Mountain High School Friday and Saturday. And it is like a Paralympics.
Yeah.
So very exciting. A lot of great athletes will be out, and come on out and support another great Mesa weekend activity. Thanks.
Okay. Anything else? Oh, yeah. Yesterday,
go ahead.
No, why don't you go ahead?
Well, I didn't get steak.
Oh, that's okay. All right. Vice Mayor Jones and Councilmember Finter and I had the opportunity to attend the naming ceremony for the new Pat Gilbert Community Center, the Mesa Cans Center, down on, for a new leaf down on 635 East Broadway. A great little rehabilitation project that turned a very worn and dated building into a great community service center that is run primarily by a new leaf, and a really good event, and you know, well-deserved honor for Pat Gilbert, former city council member and vice mayor, who worked tirelessly to make that happen. And you know, but for his efforts, not only would that not exist, that building would have probably been torn down. So a lot of people got involved, real nice facility. Then after that, we had the opportunity as a council to attend the Mesa United Way recognition luncheon, and a special luncheon because it recognized the long service of Carol McCormack, who is unfortunately leaving us to be with her husband, who
works for the Navy
and therefore ended up in Norfolk, Virginia. We just couldn't get him to get a nuclear sub base here in Mesa. I don't know why. According to the government, the federal government, the Salt River is completely navigable. I don't know why you can't drive a nuclear sub up there. But Mark had to go back, has been back in Norfolk, Virginia for about a year, and Carol just decided she needed to be with her husband. Can't understand that, but... So it was really commemorating her service, her 11 years of service, and we're sorry to see her go, but excited for the future of her future and the future of the United States United Way. Okay, anything else? Great, Mr. Brady.
Just a reminder, next Thursday we'll have the next study session at 7:30 a.m.
Cool. Okay.
Thank you.
Ms. Crocker, has anyone shown up since the last time I asked you if there's anyone wish to speak?
No one, Mayor.
Okay. Entertain a motion go into executive session. Have one from the Vice Mayor, second from Councilmember Summers. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We will now fly friendly into the executive session with fat-free fried fritters.
No, we know that. It's implied.
It's implied that they're fried.
Fly-friendly fat-free fritters.
Okay.